You know, my grandfather, or my dad would come home from deer hunting and they'd spin this whole story about all that happened. They had such a skill for telling a good story that you can just imagine yourself in the deer stand, sitting right next to them, experiencing everything that they're telling you. When it comes to a favorite character, oftentimes we're drawn to characters that are relatable, whether it's somebody that we're very familiar with, we can in one way or another relate to, or even aspirational, somebody that serves as inspiration to what we can be. Just to name a couple basic examples, some popular selections might be David, somebody who is passionate, he's zealous for the Lord, but he fails spectacularly in some ways, but through his devotion and service to God, he's able to continue and to keep on keeping on. Similar situation with Peter. The Apostle Paul is another very popular one, somebody who's deeply convicted, somebody who didn't really seem to beat around the bush. He was fairly blunt in conveying information. He was fearless. We have characters like Ruth, someone who is loyal, hardworking, and selfless. And perhaps maybe some more obscure ones, and this can help see if my kids are paying attention. There could be somebody like Barnabas, somebody who was so devoted to being encouraging to the brethren that his very name was changed because of how hard he worked at that. Somebody who stuck his neck out for people to give them another chance. He did that with Paul when everyone was afraid of his reputation from his prior life. And later he did that in opposition to Paul with John Mark. And even Paul, as he later writes in his epistles, only had good things to say about John Mark. And so in that way, Paul appeared to be in the wrong in that situation. Perhaps Onesimus, somebody who is very useful in God's kingdom, somebody who was very loyal to the Apostle Paul, and also displayed great courage and fearlessness when he had to go back and face his master, even in the face of what might have been dire consequences. So all these things, whether we're choosing a favorite story or favorite Bible character, kind of have this thread in common, that these are all things that we can relate to one way or another. But we're going to look at a story here in Mark chapter 5, if you will turn there. We're going to look at a story here in Mark chapter 5. This is a New Testament story that contains almost none of these qualities at first glance. At first glance, this story is one of the most extreme interactions in all of the New Testament. In fact, besides Jesus, we don't even know the name of the main character that we're looking at. So just to provide some context to the story, this was the scripture reading, Mark 5, verses 35 through 41. After Jesus had done some teaching, they set sail across the sea, and the great storm comes, and Jesus is asleep. They wake him up. And then Jesus calms the storm. Well, in this interaction, there are really two vital questions that are asked that are going to be resoundingly answered in this story. The first one is in verse 41. Who can this be that even the wind and sea obey him? And the second question, verse 38. Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? So both of these questions, let's keep that in mind, because both of these questions, Jesus is about to put on a show. And he's about to resoundingly answer these two questions. So, if you will read with me, we'll read to start here, the first 12 verses. We're going to look at a character. Again, this guy doesn't have a name that we know him of. But we're first going to look at a man who is enslaved, then somebody who is set free, and then someone with a story to tell. So we're reading starting in verse 1 through verse 12. It reads, Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs. No one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains. And the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken to pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus was afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." For he had said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." Then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Also he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding near the mountains, so all the demons begged him, saying, "Send us to the swine, that we may enter them." So the character that we're looking at is described as somebody who is completely unhinged and out of control. This is somebody who apparently made a habit of aggressively running towards any newcomers. This was a man who was so far removed from any normal human status that the dwelling place that was appropriate for him was in the tombs, amongst the dead and the dying, the decaying corpses. This was the place where this man found home. This was also somebody who was dangerous. This was somebody who needed to be restrained. He was a danger to himself and also to others. But yet he was too strong. He couldn't be chained. He could not be restrained. This was somebody who spent all day and night screaming and howling. This would have been somebody that no doubt parents in the area would have warned their children to stay far from. This is a man that could not be around others, and to a large extent, this is describing somebody who hated himself. Along with the screaming that he would do night and day, he seemed to also have spent the majority of his time inflicting harm on himself. Now, there's another account in Luke 8 that we'll just reference a couple times through the lesson, but we'll stay mostly in this account in Mark 5. But the account in Luke 8 describes this man throwing himself on the ground in front of Jesus. So whether when it's describing this man as cutting himself with stones, whether it's through the process of him throwing himself on the ground or deliberately cutting his skin with stones, this represents a degree of self-loathing that completely disregards his own body and deliberately abuses it. This was a man that was possessed by demons. And this was someone who was aware of the question that was asked by Jesus' disciples. When they asked, "Who can this be?" When this man sees Jesus, he declares him as Jesus, Son of the Most High God. Now, when this man was asked what his name was, he had an interesting answer. These demons that were within him were so ingrained in this man, they were such a prominent part of this man's life, that when asked for his name, the only way he could answer was to reference all of these demons that lived within him. His only form of identification was that he called himself Legion. Now again, when we want to think of a story that might be relatable, perhaps we're seeing a little bit right now some of the ominous echoes of our current day culture, where there's so many today that if you ask who they are, they won't give you a name. They will instead reference perhaps some depraved sexual orientation, whether gay, trans, bi, all these things. Those things seem to take precedent over their identification above everything else. So these weren't just a few demons. In the name Legion, references many. We're not sure exactly how many this was. Provide a number. In the time of Augustus, at the time of Jesus, Legion was the largest number of units in the Roman army, and it referred to a number of 6,826 men. That's 6,100 foot soldiers, 726 horsemen. Now, biblical demon possession obviously was not the same as what we might have in our heads when it comes to maybe some Hollywood depictions. And while it's clear that this man operated under a heavy influence and under the power and strength of these demonic forces, this wasn't a case of this man being solely controlled by these demons. And then here are a couple key verses to maybe hone in on. Despite these demons fearing Jesus, not wanting anything to do with him, this man still runs before Jesus and worships him. In verses 9, 10, and 12, we'll kind of go through this and notice some of the pronoun change. So Jesus asked him what his name is. It says, "And he answered, and he said, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' Also, he," this is the man, "he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country." In verse 12, it seems to be all the demons together communicating to Jesus, where it's only saying "we" and "us." So in total, we have here described a man who is completely unhinged and out of control and dangerous. This is someone who, despite the best efforts from others, he cannot be helped by anyone else, and not even himself. This is an individual who has deeply warring or conflicting intentions, goals, and objectives. On one hand, he's running before Jesus, worshiping him, but on the other hand, rejecting his help and not wanting these enslaving demons to leave him. In summary, this is a tragic and dramatic representation of the human state when separated from God. So back to the original question posed at the start of this lesson. Perhaps we ought to maybe give this story a bit more thought when it comes to how relatable it ought to be to us. Each and every one of us are depicted by this man here. The account in Luke 8 describes this man as being naked. And if we think back to Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve, when they first sinned and ate of the fruit, the first thing they noticed was that they were naked, which represents the spiritual death that had just occurred. And despite doing their best to clothe themselves by sewing fig leaves together, they still hide from God and later admit that they were still naked. This, as well as the fact that this man dwelled with the dead in the tombs, further illustrates the reality that apart from God, we are dead, completely helpless, vulnerable, and there is nothing we can do to cover ourselves by our own effort. But does this really apply to us? I mean, we can't really be possessed by demons forces today. I want to suggest, yes, we can. If you will turn with me to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians 2, read verses 1 through 3. It reads, "And you he made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of the world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others." So we too, apart from God, live in a state of death, of hopelessness, helplessness, and depravity and slavery to the devil and his whims, even referred to as children of disobedience. I want to hone in here in verse 1 as well, that there is no degree of dead that's being talked about here. We were all dead in trespasses and sins. There is no third degree cancer patients walking around. There is no dead or dying. There is no terminal illness. There are two ways that we exist apart from God. It is either dead or dead. And perhaps sometimes we might fool ourselves into thinking, well, I'm a good person, I don't hurt anybody. But apart from God, we are told very clearly that we exist in this state of death and hopelessness. But that's not how this story ends. Back to Mark 5. Mark 5, we'll read verses 13 through 17. So this is after they're begging Jesus that they may enter into the swine. Starting verse 13. And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. And there were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the one who had been demon-possessed and who had the legion. He was sitting, clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened to him and how he who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. So despite these seemingly unbeatable, powerful, and overwhelming forces that had hold of this man, despite these forces working in this man's life, there were nothing compared to God and his power. Verse 12, these demons had to beg Jesus that they may enter into the swine. Verse 13, Jesus gave them permission. Sometimes we might, and society will talk about how spiritual warfare, that there's almost equal playing fields on either side. But the power of Satan and of his demons are not equal to God's might and his power. Just a quick verse to reference, Jude verse 6. Puts things into perspective pretty well. It reads, "And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day." These are all beings that are awaiting judgment. And in Revelations chapter 12, verse 12, and this is a good verse to keep in mind, as it may seem that we're being faced with overwhelming forces and opposition. This is only something that's been helpful to reflect on. Revelations 12, verse 12. "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that his time is short." The best that the devil and his forces can do is to take as many of us out as they can before they themselves are judged. But why the pigs? Why did all these pigs have to die for this? The account in Luke 8, these demons beg Jesus to not send them into the pit. This is likely that place that was talked about, Jude 6, where they'll be chained, reserved for judgment. And so Jesus sends them to the pigs. Now, there might be some of us that fall on many different sides of the spectrum when it comes to how we feel about these pigs dying. I'm probably on the one far end where, yeah, I've butchered hogs and chickens and rabbits and whatever and deer. Not that big of a deal. And perhaps some of us might wring our hands at just the thought of, boy, this nonsensical loss of life. Regardless of where we fall on that spectrum one way or another, surely we can all agree that this just seems like a really big waste, at the very least. Why on earth do 2,000 pigs die when Jesus just could have sent these demons away into the pit and be done with it? Well, remember our two questions that were asked. We got the answer of who Jesus was, that he was Son of the Most High God. But here we get an answer to that second question. When the disciples asked Jesus, "Don't you care that we are perishing?" So what greater way could Jesus display his care and his love for this man than to forever allow this man to be able to physically look and see the source of the slavery, the source of these oppressive demon forces that were controlling his life, be able to look at how they had driven this herd of swine insane, and to see them physically fall down to their death into the waters and drowned. Jesus values us so highly that even 2,000 living animals being violently killed seem to be considered as nothing for the sake of this one man to be able to forever remember what Jesus did for him. So then we get to other people's reaction to what Jesus did. Upon seeing this man restored, they were afraid, didn't want anything to do with Jesus, and they asked him to leave. They observed this man being clothed and in his right mind. It's funny how those things go hand in hand. We talked about how nakedness kind of displays that state of vulnerability apart from God, but this further illustrates that Jesus' restoring power clothes our nakedness. But still, this has struck me as something odd. Why on earth would these people look at this great thing that Jesus had done and react in this way? That they'd be afraid and that they'd ask him to leave. Sometimes when confronted with a fork in the road and the realization that we need to change our ways, we can be intimidated and try to suppress and push away that source that is confronting us, as it could be too hard or painful to confront. Kind of debated whether or not to share this, but because I'm ashamed of it, but I think it can be helpful. In recent weeks, the kids have been asking every night if I can tell them a Bible story, like what we had made a habit of doing. And I just would be constantly blowing them off and just be like, "No, Papa's tired, I'm busy, stressed, don't got time." And it was a couple weeks ago, kind of as I was pondering this question, and I caught myself as one of my kids came up to me and asked the same question, "Can you tell us a Bible story before we go to bed?" That I found myself, I had cut him off before he even finished his sentence. No, go to bed. Sometimes the way that we're confronted can happen even from the most simple and innocent situations. The fact was that I felt guilty about it. And so my reaction to that guilt was just to not even hear it. It might do us some good to maybe reflect on ourselves and to contemplate. Maybe there's some things that are staring us in the face right now. Ways that we know we ought to change, but we don't want to confront and are doing everything we can to reject and to suppress that reality. So then we get to the final part of this story, verses 18 through 20. So when he had got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done to you and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. So now we have this man who is restored and in his right mind. And this man wanted to follow Jesus. And this wasn't somebody who was homeless and had nothing to go back to. We're told that this man had a home. We're told that this man had friends. Despite all of that, he was willing to let all of that go so that he could follow Jesus. But another curious thing happens. Jesus says no. I think there are a couple things that we can take from this. Sometimes or oftentimes, the mission that we are called to do in God's kingdom is not what we have in mind. Nor is it often as glamorous as what we might hope for. Because this man had something valuable with him. This man was going to forever carry with him something that each and every one of us have. This man had a story to tell. Imagine how some of these interactions might have been when he was able to go home to the people who knew him and would be able to describe to them the transforming power and grace and saving power that Jesus performed over him. Where he could describe to them, "You knew how unhinged and how uncontrolled I was. Now I live a life of restraint. You saw how I was naked and now I am clothed. You saw how hopeless and aimless and self-loathing I was, but now I live a life of purpose and knowledge, knowing that I am God's child." So in conclusion, I guess we have this question to ask ourselves. Do I have this story? Or has it been taken away from me? Has Satan regained a foothold within us? Or have we never made a decision to cast him away? I want us to contemplate just a little bit, very briefly here, the role of water in this story. We looked at how water is used as an instrument of God's power, destruction, and judgment. We see that through the flood, the storm in the waters, back in chapter 4. And we see how it is used to destroy the pigs. Now, why didn't Jesus, again, cast these demons into the pit? Did he have compassion on these demons? No. Their fate is sealed. But again, this seems to be done entirely for the benefit of this man. This man would forever be able to look back and physically see that these powers that had enslaved him being washed away by the waters. And we have that very same blessing afforded to us today through baptism, where we can forever look back and see how these controlling forces in our lives have been washed away through baptism. So whatever situation you're required to do, whether it's to make the change that is needed or to finally accept Christ and to be baptized, pray that you make the right one as we come and as we sing.